Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Geekcast Radio's unofficial flagship podcast, Altered Geek Unlimited, episode 19. I am your host for this week's show, Michael Powers, and I'm joined, as always, by Steve Megatron Phillips.
Yo.
I did it. I got it right.
Yes.
Sorry for my absence last week. I had every intention of being there, and I just had a miserable day at work. And I didn't feel like sitting down and feigning interest in something. Just like, I wasn't interested in like what was being talked about on last week's show with all the casting rumors and stuff like that. It's just like, I just wanted to be done with the day when I got home from work. Especially after like the previous night recording off the cuff 38. I don't know if people will notice. I'm kind of blah on episode 38 because I had taken a decongestant that day, so I didn't want two podcasts to suffer from my apparent lack of enthusiasm for the material. So I opted out of last week's show. But I'm back. And Steve, I know you've got some things that you want to bring up before I let you talk about your opinions on Arkham Origins. So
yeah. Just for quick housekeeping purposes. We had a nice little meeting the other night, and consisting of some future things that will come that people will be, I think, enthusiastic about. For some of it, be sure to check the Facebook page, because some of that is going to be kind of teased and hinted at there a little bit, more so than the homepage for that kind of stuff. We're going to keep this episode kind of light on news. So, the only bits we're going to cover this week is going to be pertaining to Arrow. Which, there has been a casting rumor, or not casting rumor, casting confirmation. Robert Knepper, who played T-Bag on Prison Break, and has been in quite a few other things. He was on Heroes and that whole carnival thing that ruined the show. He's been cast as the Clock King.
So this just goes back to our discussion about how they're going to use everybody but Batman.
Pretty much. I'm kind of sad that they're doing this, because they've already name-dropped Ra's al Ghul in the show. You've already seen the League of Assassins. You already had, some guys like Deadshot or, you know, stuff like that. Those guys are kind of, they can go anywhere. And I'm not going to reveal any spoilers because the episode just came out this week. And I just watched it a couple hours ago, so I do have to say that the second half of that kind of quasi two-parter that is the mid-season finale of Arrow is really good, but it's the last 20 minutes of it that's actually the defining part of the show, kind of giving it that next evolution on the second half of the second season when it comes back. It introduces the new villain. It also introduces some elements. I guess we can kind of somewhat talk about the Flash thing based on the fact that everybody knows it's going to happen anyway.
Right.
They actually kind of hint at it, and he's also the reason that Arrow actually gets the face mask for his eyes.
Okay.
He suggests it to him and then actually gives him a present of it. And I guess he's well aware of all the other kind of vigilante people around, like Black Canary and Huntress and Arrow. So, but it kind of leads off with him in his kind of precinct area where he's they're testing like the kind of like an atomic collider type thing.
Well, yeah, the collider, what's interesting is I didn't really put I didn't put two things together until they hit it on the nose, because that collider, they've been teasing that in the background the entire season, and I picked up on that. But I was like, what are they going to do with the collider? Like, I knew that everyone knew that the Flash was going to show up in this season of Arrow, or that the character was going to be introduced. And even, I think from like the very first episode, the collider is mentioned like on news reports or something like that, like in the background in different scenes. Like, nobody's ever mentioned it specifically. And I was kind of in the back of my mind, the longer the season went on, I was like, man, they're going to do something with this. Is this going to be like the event? Is it going to be like the mid-season like catastrophe? Is it going to be like the end, like the season finale? Like, is it going to be like a lead up to it? And it wasn't until, the Flash shows up in the episode right before the mid-season finale that everything came like full circle. Like, it was weird. Like, I didn't put the fact that they were, plugging away at this collider and that the Flash was eventually going to show up. I didn't see them as the same event. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Until the Flash actually shows up and I was like, oh, I'm so dumb. Of course, that's it. So. But.
Yeah, and they kind of tied that in there, and you have the whole Star Labs and which is more of a Superman thing. And then you have Amanda Waller in the show, obviously, earlier on. But at this point, they actually have like the chemicals start kind of floating because this collider kind of implodes. And then a nice sized bolt of lightning comes down and zaps Barry into the chemicals. And then he's laying on the ground and you see like a red electricity thing go through his cheek. And that's the last you see of him for the episode.
Okay.
There's a couple other big things that happen at the end that I won't go into this week. We can kind of chat about it next week. That'll give me time also to catch up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Which I've kind of not really paid attention to.
No one has.
I think it's kind of, I think Arrow is kind of trumping that at this point.
Which is surprising because, well, I had major problems. I had problems with the first season of Arrow.
So did I.
But the last half of the first season, things got turned around, in my opinion, and it kind of carried over to the second season. And it's just gotten better from there. And I do appreciate, someone pointed out on Twitter today, I actually saw an interesting comment on it because someone was tweeting about their reaction to the mid-season finale. And one of the big issues I had with the first season of Green Arrow is that he ran around killing everybody. Like, wholesale. And that's one of the things that kind of like miffed me, but not so much that he was like killing people, it was that he was like, no, you shouldn't kill people. Only I can kill people. That, like, really irked me every time there was a conversation about the morality of killing somebody, because he would just go off willy-nilly and kill people.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like that the guy brought up on the that brought up in the tweet is that the show earned that when he turned the corner and pledged not to kill again. Like they gave him a reason. It's not just like the show earned that concept of him not killing anybody anymore. Which I thought was really neat. Like, he's doing it because his friend died and he's doing it in honor of his friend. It's not just, oh, I'm just not going to kill people anymore. Like, it's the reason for him not killing was written nicely into the story. And you got to see the transformation of the character going from like this hard edge guy that's just out to accomplish things by any means necessary to realizing that there's repercussions to what he does.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of cheesy to talk about a show on the CW about B-tiered superheroes, but they did it, and it's paid off really well.
Well, and then some of the interesting stuff. I mean, there's even something with Roy in there, who everybody knows is kind of turning, you know, eventually turns into, like, Red Arrow or whatever his sidekick name is later on. The one thing I found kind of strange about Arrow, and I didn't realize this until they dropped the kind of line, or Arrow dropped the line in the show. I didn't know who Cyrus Gold was.
Okay.
Or who he was supposed to be. And I didn't realize it was Solomon Grundy.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Back up for a second. Who are we talking about now?
In the show, it's the, Oliver fights against, Cyrus Gold, which apparently in the comics is the former name of the supervillain Solomon Grundy.
Okay, forgive me. Who's Cyrus Gold in the TV show? Because like, one of the things is kind of... I skip over the names unless it's the actual
people. I think it's the guy with the mask on,
oh,
I want to say.
Okay, so the guy that's just shown up. Okay, all right.
Yeah, which I didn't know who this Cyrus Gold is, but then I heard the whole fairy tale thing of him where they say, you know, born on a Monday.
Right, yeah.
And I... You know, and because he drops that line in the show, and I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, I didn't see Solomon Grundy in there because I think of the giant reanimated dead guy. But I guess that's the former name of him before he's a reanimated corpse.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out, because he's got that super soldier serum in him.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, it has been known to resurrect people. So, and heal them and all that. So there's a couple other twists with that. And that was something that just kind of caught me off guard. Cause I'm like, wait, I didn't know Solomon Grundy was in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that the second half of the second season is going to be very interesting. Cause for one, the Clock King is going to show up. You're going to have, I'm sure the Flash will show up. I'm sure Roy will become another alias. And then you have Sebastian Blood in there and Slade and
right,
all this stuff coming full circle. So it's actually got me intrigued for the show. I never got into Smallville despite trying to watch two seasons of it, and I was like, yeah, this is crap. And sorry to anybody that likes it, that's my opinion. I find Arrow to be much better
than Smallville.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, part of the problem with Smallville was, and
I put the damn cape and cowl on, or cape on.
Not so much that, I enjoyed Smallville. I watched every episode from beginning to end. I enjoyed it. Certain seasons I like more than others, but Smallville had the same problem that I had with Heroes, which is when you have really powerful characters, you can't portray them on television. Not in a manner that is satisfactory, at least to me. And that was one of the problems they had with, you know, with Smallville, is that you couldn't really get a sense of how strong Superman actually is. And I think the only thing that I've ever seen that's actually accomplished that is, like, the animated stuff and Man of Steel. And so Smallville always had those issues, and Smallville's biggest problem was in its season finales. Like, it always felt like a prom date that ended badly. Like, it was the biggest nerd... Every season finale was, like, the biggest nerd tease on the face of the planet. And whatever was set up in the season finale of Smallville was wrapped up before the opening song in the season premiere. So it's like one of those things where they like leave you on a cliffhanger. You're like, oh man, it's gonna be so awesome when we come back. And then you get the season premiere for the next season, and it's all wrapped up in the first like 30 seconds of the episode, and you're like, what? Hold up. I just waited 4 months for this to come back, and the story's wrapped up in 30 seconds. What? No. And it's because they don't have the money for it. It's the same problem they had with Heroes. Like, one of my favorite characters in Heroes was Siler, who was played by the excellent Zachary Quinto. And the way that his character is designed is that he can manipulate, or he can take other heroes' abilities. And in a sense, he makes himself one of the most powerful characters in the Heroes universe. But you never get to see him flex his true power. And it's just like the biggest letdown. Whereas Arrow keeps things grounded. Because there haven't really been... Flash will be the first time you've actually seen a superpower to any real extent.
True.
Even Canary was written off as just having like sonic grenades. Instead of having like the full-on sonic scream. So I'm not saying that there aren't other superpowered beings in the series, but so far the series has been based around people that are just... extremely fit.
Yeah,
for lack of a better way of saying it. So, and that makes it a little easier. That makes the stories a little more compelling, because they don't have to worry about, oh, can he lift a car over his head? Can he throw a car? Can he, you know, can he run faster than the speed of light? Which is going to be interesting when they get to doing the Flash show, to see how they're able to handle a show where there are superpowers.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to do that as well.
Now, I really like the interpretation of Flash that was in Smallville.
I didn't even know he was in it.
Oh, yeah. He's got some of the best episodes.
Was Arrow in it?
In Smallville?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Green Arrow became a big part of Smallville for like the last, forgive me, probably 3 or 4 seasons.
Hmm.
Obviously not the same guy.
No.
But yeah, they tried the whole thing that they're trying to do right now. I don't want to say tried. I'll put up little air quotes. They tried to do it with Smallville. I think there's even an episode of Smallville called the Justice League. They have Hawkman. They have, I think, Martian Manhunter is in there. They had Cyborg, they had Flash, but then something happened and they had to start calling him Impulse.
Huh.
They had Aquaman.
I wonder why that all fell apart.
They tried to do it. Each character came on and had their own little mini episode with Clark Kent. And then there was like a bigger thing where Clark got himself in trouble and they all banded together to go and save him. But he like never wanted to join their little team. And it was really neat. And like I said, I always appreciated the stuff with Flash, because one of the things they did with the it I can't remember which Flash it was. It wasn't Barry Allen that they used. I can't remember which one it was that they used. But they had
Wally
him as
West.
a, I think it was Wally, maybe. But they portrayed him as a thief. That Clark set on the right path. So it was just really cool, and the way that they did like the super speed in Smallville was kind of fun too. So, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Flash gets handled inside of this universe, and if this has any more. If adding the Flash to the universe has any ramifications on the show of Arrow, as it is, because I can understand genetically enhanced beings, I can understand and just really fit guys, doing the superhero stuff. That's my cat. If anyone can hear stuff being moved around in the background. What was I gonna say? Like Count Vertigo, like that was like a drug that wasn't like an eyepiece that hypnotized people, which was nice to see that grounded twist on the character. I'm bummed about what happened to him because I like that actor. Yeah, no, Arrow's been a lot of fun. So.
I definitely look forward to more from that. That's for sure. And I think I have one other thing. Oh yeah, it's another TV DC related thing. There's been an update on Fox's Gotham TV series. I don't know if you saw that.
Is this the Bruce Wayne announcement?
Yeah. I don't understand why. Like, they can have Bruce Wayne in the show. I mean, granted, it'll probably be the kid Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
But it says it'll probably be a regular series role, which why that would matter in the grand scheme of a Gotham show, considering he's just a kid.
Maybe he's not just a kid.
Yeah.
I
Maybe he's a
don't know.
teenager, I don't know, but.
Maybe that's how he becomes the world's greatest detective, by following Jim Gordon,
Yeah.
the man who can't solve his way out of a paper bag.
But Batman stalks him and figures it out for him.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't understand why they're doing that, but again.
Oh, you know what? I have a little rant. Not necessarily a rant, just something that kind of bums me out. I just want to say up front, I have come to terms with the fact that Christian Bale is no longer Batman. I've come to terms with that. I came to terms with that rather quickly, as we've already discussed on the podcast. However, some of the stuff that's been tossed around about like the type of Batman that they're going for, like the older, wiser Batman that is launching drones from his Batcave to fight crime instead of like going out and doing it himself. That sounds really cool to me. But what bums me out now is on Black Friday, I got the Ultimate Trilogy Collection for the Dark Knight movies on Blu-ray, and because I never bought Dark Knight Rises on Blu-ray. I was waiting for this master collective set, which is awesome, by the way. I was waiting for this to come out, and it did, and I picked it up on Black Friday, and so I got to watch Dark Knight Rises again. First of all, I still really like that movie. It has its problems, and it should have gone way more in the No Man's Land direction. I blame Heath Ledger for that, for it not going in that direction. Because there are hints of it. There are hints of the No Man's Land story arc, like littered throughout the second half of that movie.
Okay.
Which you know what that is, right? Where Gotham is basically turned into a demilitarized zone,
Oh yeah, and they
and they cordon off the city into sections. But there's hints of that in the last half of Dark Knight Rises. However, from the description that they've given for what they the descriptions that are out there for what type of Batman Affleck is going to be played, after seeing Dark Knight Rises again in the comfort of my own home and being able to like dissect it and pay attention to it, that is an extension of Christian Bale's Batman from Dark Knight Rises. Like, that is what he could have been doing in the 8 years that he hung up, you know, that he quote unquote hung up the cowl after The Dark Knight. Like, he could have been sitting there. Clearly, he wasn't done being Batman, because by the time we come back and we see him 8 years again, he has all new toys. He doesn't have a new suit, but he's got a brand new Batcave and everything else. So clearly, he's still been tinkering with things. Like, he still could have been the guy just launching drones. You know what I'm saying? Like, that just bums me out that it's not Christian Bale.
I mean, I can kind of see both ways.
I'm just saying it's a natural extension of what Nolan had already set up for him, being like he's beaten, he doesn't really want to do it anymore, so he's just going to sit in his cave and he's just going to like launch drones out to help fight crime. Like, that's...
Oh no, I mean, I can totally get behind that concept. I agree. I mean, it's a natural progression, but I don't necessarily have a problem with Ben Affleck now at this point.
No, and I don't either. I'm just saying, in rewatching Dark Knight Rises, I was sad that it's not... I was saddened again that it's not going to be Bale. Because it seemed like such a natural fit. And the fact that Man of Steel is so... It's so much... Like, yes, it's definitely a Zack Snyder movie, but it looks so much like a Christopher Nolan movie. Like, visually, it looks like a Christopher Nolan movie. Like, the color palette and everything.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, another thing, because I don't know if I've been on here to talk about this. I watched / listened to the commentary track for Man of Steel. Learned some interesting things. One, Zod's suit was entirely CG.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's quite strange.
First of all, I didn't know that, and it doesn't look CG at all. Like,
no, it looks like he's actually wearing it.
Yeah, which is amazing in and of itself. Second, Superman's suit is actually red and blue. Like, they actually made it red and blue, but when they color timed the movie, it's not red. Like, it's very, very muted. But in actuality, the suit... Because when they were showing the behind-the-scenes stuff of Henry Cavill in the suit, like, it is actually red, yellow, and blue. And not this, like, blue that's almost black and the red that's almost like a blood color red. It's actually red and blue. They just color timed it so it's all muted out and washed out like the Batman movies were.
Huh.
So it was interesting to see that. But... Anyways, I'm excited for what Man of Steel 2 is going to be. I don't know... If you guys Justice talked about League. This, like, yeah, basically, how long is it going to be before they just call it what it is, which is Justice League?
That's actually funny, because that's what I called the last episode of Altered Geek. Call it what it is.
The other thing is, I saw that there was a comment on the message board about how Wonder Woman could just end up being
Black Widow.
Black Widow was in Iron Man 2, and that would be a travesty for the character.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
I thought of that too. I thought that they could go that way too. Like, I do think... I think when all is said and done, that even if it's called Man of Steel 2 or it's called Batman vs. Superman, I'm still going to like the movie because I'm going to geek out. I'm going to geek out on it because if there's one thing that I think Warner Brothers does really well, I do... Tonally, I like the Warner Brothers superheroes more than the Marvel movies. I just always have. There's a gritty realism that's there that the Marvel movies lack. And so I'm pretty sure I'll geek out about it and I'll really enjoy it. I would imagine the same people that didn't like Iron Man 2, they're going to dislike the Batman versus Superman movie for the same reason they didn't like Iron Man 2.
Well, like, I don't care for Iron Man 2. I don't hate it, but I don't like it either. But I'm still kind of on the fence of this, at least until I see a trailer.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot riding on this, right? Like, what does Batman even look like? What's Wonder Woman going to... We need to know what these characters are going to look like. We know who's playing them, but we need to know what they're going to look like.
Well, not only what they're going to look like, but there's been conflicting things back and forth about the Batmobiles. Whether they're going with the 30s or that Cadillac 16, or if they're going to do that one hybrid that kind of looks like a Tumbler mixed with the 89, mixed with the New Adventures.
As long as it doesn't have a giant ass fin on it, I'm okay.
Yeah, it has to be like a subtle fin, honestly, that fits it better. But I almost want to say that they're cramming too many people in this.
Well, but,
like,
but
right from the get-go.
But that's what I'm saying. People had that. There was that same issue with Iron Man 2, because they were throwing in, like, all of a sudden, like, War Machine's going to show up and Black Widow's going to show up and just like all this. They were cramming all, and S.H.I.E.L.D. had this overwhelming presence in the movie. And so if you took S.H.I.E.L.D. as a character, like just as a character, you've got S.H.I.E.L.D. and you've got Black Widow, and you had War Machine, who actually had a presence. He wasn't just like a friend. So, I mean, basically, that's kind of what they've done with Man of Steel 2. They've added Batman, who technically could be like that overwhelming presence that is is S.H.I.E.L.D. And then you've got, you know, you've got Black Widow, Wonder Woman, and then you've got, I don't know, there's another smaller cameo. The problem is how they treat these cameos.
They need, like, to give them enough respect if they're going to bring them in, but they need to not have them be prime focus.
Yeah, and
they could pull an Agent Coulson and be fine with it.
Yeah, I think, but you know who would make a great Agent Coulson in the DC universe?
Who?
Martian Manhunter.
I could see that.
Just as a guy that always just shows up.
Or Cyborg.
I was thinking of some of that. Well, because Coulson came off as kind of having like an omnipresence, like knowing more than he actually let on.
Yeah, I can see that then.
And I can see the Martian Manhunter, obviously because he's a telepath, he can do that. If Wonder Woman is treated with the same way Black Widow was in Iron Man 2, that's just a travesty. Because I don't even know that. I'm wondering how much of this stuff is just like credit sequence stuff. Because how can you even, they drop the charade and it's no longer called
Batman vs Superman
and it's called Justice League.
Because I think they're pulling that magical card. I think they're trying to get everybody all pissed off and geared up that, oh, they're going to ruin it. Why don't you just call it Justice League? And they'll be like, oh, okay, that's what we're going to call it anyway. So,
isn't there a way that you could parlay this into... Isn't there a... The first... I'm trying to remember... Maybe I'm making the story up in my head. It's like an amalgamation of some of the animated series stuff. But isn't like one of the first episodes of the Justice League about how they all come together? Like that's like the first episode, right? How they all come together.
It's the first three episodes,
right? But isn't there like an odd man out that they're trying to recruit? And isn't that Superman?
No, I think Batman and Superman end up coming together to begin with.
Okay, that's right, because the aliens attack the Wayne Tech satellite station.
Yeah, and then they have to, and Batman's got help from the Martian Manhunter right from the get-go, and then Wonder Woman comes in, and Green Lantern, and Flash, and...
You know, what if they were just doing that?
I would be fine with that. I mean, I've heard, I know that they're going to be bringing in the Flash from TV.
I've heard that stuff. I don't know.
I don't know if they're going to actually bring him specifically. I think it would be stupid not to. if they're going to have a television series about it. I don't have a problem with them introducing all these characters. I just wish that they'd call it what it is and
be
you know,
done with it. Yeah.
Yeah, and just be done with it instead of trying to dance around this, oh, it's Batman versus Superman, they're going to fight, blah, 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 when they've already given that kind of lead up that it's going to be a big old battle, and then they went and kind of, you know, I mean, that was their way of teasing it, but I think everybody got inferred it differently.
All right. So basically, I know I've said this before on some podcasts that I've been on the Geekcast Radio Network, is that, yeah, Marvel went the one direction. Excuse me. Marvel went the one direction where they made all these smaller movies and built up to the Avengers. Except Marvel kind of had to do that. Because Marvel was a brand new studio.
And nobody knows who half the characters are, really. I mean,
well,
before they...
DC's going to start running into that problem too. But what I'm getting at is Marvel Studios is a brand new studio, and they had to be very careful with how they spent their money. And after they hit the ground running with Iron Man, they just didn't stop. You know, they parlayed the Iron Man success into Iron Man 2, and the universe exploded with I'm not saying like Iron Man 2 was like, I liked Iron Man 2, so I will say Iron Man 2 was a good movie, and it exploded. It blew up the Marvel Cinematic Universe into all these different trees. So you got Iron Man and Captain America, or Thor and Captain America, which came back around to the Avengers. But each movie, the success of each movie bankrolled the next one. And eventually it was like, now they've got like a war chest, if you will, to produce all these projects. Warner Brothers doesn't have that problem, because Warner Brothers has some of the most popular franchises in the world already. And though all of those movies, you know, fund other movies, and I'm not just talking about like the DC stuff, I'm talking about like, you know, The Matrix, even though that's just like a, they're not making those anymore, but they've got the Lord of the Rings movies, they've got the Harry Potter movies, which they're not done with. Anyway, they have bigger franchises than just comic book stuff to generate revenue for their companies. So they don't have to start with these smaller pictures the way that Marvel did. I think they can just go balls to the wall and come out swinging with a Justice League movie right off the bat. And then spin them off into their smaller movies. Like I think they can go the opposite direction that Marvel did, because they already have the money.
I can see that.
So my only concerns is that Legendary Pictures is no longer involved and Nolan's not really involved anymore. But I do like Snyder and Goyer as a writer. I don't have a problem with his directing leaves a little bit to be desired, but I did like Blade 3, so
yeah. I'm a little stuck as well, but again, it's one of those things. They're having fun with the rumors and they're having fun with the castings, and like Doomsday is possibly going to be in it, or Martian Manhunter's possibly going to be in it, and
I bet
the Flash, and
I think we'll see. Well, who was in that? I think you'll see Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and probably Martian Manhunter. As far as who the villain is, I have no idea. I mean, I know there's the rumors, and I would like to see Doomsday, but I don't think the death of Superman is something you can do now, yet.
No, I think that's three movies in.
So... But,
yeah.
All right. I just wanted to get my piece in because I wasn't able to talk about that stuff last week. And as far as the casting goes for Wonder Woman, I'm fine. I'm not judging any casting thing until I actually see a trailer. So,
or see them in the costume for one.
But see, that doesn't even do it, because
well, yeah.
We've talked about this because when the Green Lantern trailer hit, everyone laughed at that suit, and the suit wasn't the problem with that movie. It was the mask. They really should have just used an actual mask instead of having a CG mask.
Kind of like they're doing on Arrow.
Right. But that movie had bigger problems than that. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't even know. I don't know what it's going to take, but I will probably have to reserve judgment until like the final product, because, and I don't want to go too in depth about this, but I am really excited for Amazing Spider-Man 2, but that first trailer looks awful. But that's just my opinion. I can talk about that on like MWire Weekly if I ever decide to be on that podcast again. Arkham Origins?
Sure. So I guess I'll let you start out on that, since you started playing it before I did.
Well, I was thinking I could piggyback off of you, because you have played it more recently than I have. Plus you
have played the other two.
Well, I've played the other two, but you played City for a lot longer than I did. Like, a lot of your initial reactions on Twitter that I saw were a direct reaction of having kind of just left Arkham City.
Yeah.
So I'd rather just piggyback off of what you've got to say, because I've talked about it on Off the Cuff and a little bit on here. So I'd like to just piggyback on your transformation, if you will, because it seems like you are enjoying the game more now than the first day.
Oh yeah. The first day I only had a half hour to play. I got through the incredibly long credits. Arkham City, you have like three studios that pop up, or you know, the three, you have the one mega screen where it's got a bunch of them on there, and it's, you can hit start and pretty much bypass a lot of it after the three. Whereas in Origins, you have to sit through like six or seven of them, which annoys me, because then I have to sit there and wait. And I mean, it's not long, it's like 20-30 seconds, but it's still, it drives me nuts. Because I just want to get in the game. I don't care. The initial impression, like from the screenshots and little animation things that they have at the beginning, I really like that. The presentation on it's a lot nicer than Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, as far as the aesthetics for the bat suit, the different modes, the health bar. It was a little jarring to get used to, because Asylum and City, you know, you had the slight differences and improvements between the two, and then being that Warner Brothers Montreal did this, they kind of retooled everything. So getting in it right from the get-go, I didn't have a problem with the play, other than it seemed like, and you kind of brought this to my attention too, being that it's the very beginning and it's like one of his early battles and everything, it seemed like some of the button pressing was nerfed.
The input lag from the controller, which is something we've talked about on Off the Cuff, and we didn't know if it was on accident or if it was intentional for it to be like a more raw Batman than, you know, the veteran Batman. So
I mean, the counter buttons and everything else, like all that stuff, because I had just played Arkham City, and a lot of that's fast-paced, especially towards the end. I was kind of ready for it ahead of time, because it seems like in this game, the battles go a hell of a lot faster than Arkham City and Arkham Asylum. It seems like the punching goes a lot faster. You're in and out a lot quicker than you would have been in the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I like it. It's just, it's painful on the hands when you're doing multiple battles throughout the day. No, the first fight with Croc was interesting. I didn't mind it. It again was kind of reminiscent of the Titan charged guys in Arkham City. And no, that was
too.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, that's fine. I like some of the added dynamics of, you know, having the ninjas and having the Titan charge or the Venom charged guys in this in Origins. And it seemed like after the Croc fight, all of the nerfing to the counters and everything else went away. It seemed like everything kind of lined up perfectly again with the the buttons.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Because it hasn't done that. It hasn't done that for me. So
it's. I don't know if it was a glitch or something. I have had a couple glitches with the game where the, and it wasn't until later, where the dialogue actually it gets out of sync of the video.
I've had that happen with nothing with the cutscenes, but with the interrogations. I've had it happen with those.
I haven't had it in the interrogation. Mine was actually on a cutscene.
Oh, wow.
It was on where Joker is being having his psychiatric evaluation by Harley Quinn.
Oh.
It was right at the beginning of that. Some of the stuff got out of sync, and I was like, okay, that's a little strange, and I thought I was going to have to shut the game off and reboot it, because in Arkham City, I actually managed to find some glitches jumping off Wonder Tower in a certain manner. You can free fall into the bottom of the map and keep falling forever. I don't know how I did it, but I did. I was afraid of that happening with this game, but I haven't had any lockups so far, thankfully. So I mean, it's a little jarring. I do like the combined weaponry of Arkham Asylum, City, all in Origins, plus the new Electro Gauntlets and the remote grapple.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really like both of those, especially the gauntlets. Those are pretty cool. I like the story throughout it. I was kind of concerned about it after all of the things that happened throughout Asylum and City, and how they were going to try and kind of bridge the gap before Asylum to kind of fit it all the way through. And I think they've tied all the side quests in there really nicely. It's like the cohesiveness of Asylum, but the openness of City.
Yes. I don't know. One of the things that Dander and I said on Off the Cuff is that this is like Arkham Asylum made you feel like you were playing made you feel like you were Batman in an instance. Like, because Asylum obviously takes place, this is where it gets kind of confusing, because all the games take place over one night. Different nights, but one night. But Asylum, being that it's in one location, it makes you feel like you're Batman in that one instance, and I feel like Origins does a really good job of making you feel like Batman just feels like being Batman on any given night. Like, this is what he goes out and he does.
Yeah.
And for some reason, for me, that again, even though the game takes place over one night, I'm playing on different nights. And I don't know if it's like the cutscenes or just like my imagination, but I feel like when I come out of something, it's like, oh, like 12 hours has elapsed, and now it's like the next night, you know? Like, I don't know. It just feels like that to me, because it doesn't feel like I'm playing for eight hours on Christmas Eve. Like, the game is supposed to take place over 8 hours on Christmas Eve, and it doesn't feel like it's doing that. It feels like it's taking place over multiple evenings. But no, I do like the story. What do you think of the voice acting?
Bane, I can see why now Bane sounds slightly different. And then eventually later he sounds like his self later on, like in the future.
Okay.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I've watched a clip scene of where somebody's actually put all of it together. So you can kind of see what happens in the story. Cause I wanted to watch it as a movie, all the cut scenes and all the, you know, throughout some of the battles. I was quite impressed with that. I think Cobblepot is the same voice actor.
Okay, but nobody cares about those guys. Come on, we care about the two big ones.
Yes, yes. I was tiptoeing around it. Troy Baker playing the Joker, I think, did a phenomenal job. If there's anybody to succeed Mark Hamill, it's this guy.
It's hard to tell, right?
It's.
I mean, you could probably tell.
Certain points. It is hard to tell. Depends on what he's saying. It depends on the emotional level of the Joker at certain points in the game in order to tell. If he's getting real dark and kind of gritty and he's doing that kind of stuff, I can definitely tell because it sounds like a more gritty, younger Joker.
Mm-hmm.
That Hamill never actually hit that area. He went darker with it, but it was in a different range. This sounds like a young, energetic range. Now, when he gets into his goofy and all the rest of the tones, he sounds, I would say, 90% close to Mark Hamill. I really love what they've done with the Joker and the surprise twists with how they introduce him and throughout the game. And I know there's an interesting twist at the end. But it also explains in this one how he comes to know Harley Quinn and why he has an infatuation with Batman, which it never actually explained before.
Yeah, like I said, they did a lot of interesting things with just the characters in this one. They explain a lot about, there's a characterization to Batman in Origins that I don't think I've ever seen before. Maybe outside of like the comics.
Yeah.
And that's been really cool. And the same thing with the Joker. Like it's not a prequel in the sense that, you know, it's just it comes before the other two games. No, this is like a prequel. It's telling you stuff. It's like, this is why the things are the way that they are, and this is how they become. It's not necessarily how they become these people, because the Joker is still already the Joker.
Well, but it also introduces the first time that Batman ever encounters him.
Right.
He's well aware of everyone else but him.
Right, but I'm just saying it's not the Joker's, you're not seeing the Joker's origins in this game. You're seeing their first meeting. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of shows.
Yeah, it tells you what happened, but it's not.
It's in a cutscene. You don't actually do
it. Yeah, like, you're not. It's telling you what happened through the Joker telling his story to Harley Quinn.
Harley.
And yeah. It's not you. It's not an event that takes place in the game. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I definitely.
It's not like. It's not like you're trailing. I'm just using this as an example here. It's not like there's a level in the game where you're playing as Batman trailing just some guy walking through Axis Chemicals and you drop him in Nevada Chemicals. You don't do that. That is not a thing in this game. But I do agree with you about the voice of the Joker. I remember I remember Danner and I came to the same conclusion, and I believe I brought it up to you, is that the portrayal of Batman in this one is more along is it actually kind of fits the suit, like the armored Batman, kind of like Bale's Batman should have, like, because there's hints of Bale's Batman in this Batman.
I think this is Bale's Batman done right.
Yes, agreed.
It's got that nice, serious, kind of deep and serious tone of Kevin Conroy. But then it's got the gruffness of, of Bale when he's actually, worked
Angry,
up.
yeah.
Which that I will concede that I think that that does work really well for these Arkham games.
Now, what do you like? What is your, because you're the Batman guy, like, and I know we had concern. Like, I will be the first one to admit, I had concerns about Origins when it was no longer Rocksteady, and it wasn't Kevin Conroy, it wasn't Mark Hamill, but dang it if they didn't do something good. And that really makes me sad because I was kind of hoping that they would fall flat on their face. So you like the Joker. Did you like Batman?
Yes and no. Yes, I liked it. I think it points when he's doing these serious talking, that's when I really notice. And I think it bothers me more that it's an imitation of Kevin Conroy and not Kevin Conroy. While I appreciate what the guy's doing, and I would not, have changed what's there, for obvious reason. I do like the Christian Bale-ness too, the attitude and the anger, but something about it rubs me the wrong way hearing him talk serious and when he's like doing his detective type stuff and not hearing Kevin Conroy doing it because of the fact that it sounds like an imitation of Kevin Conroy.
Now, see, that's interesting because I thought this Batman as a whole, the voice that they. I wish I knew the guy's voice, the voice actor's name. I feel really bad that I don't. But I feel that the guy that they got to do the voice for this Batman, I don't feel like he was doing as much of impersonation as Conroy as Troy Baker was of Mark Hamill. I actually felt like the guy that did the voice for Batman in Origins. Fit that voice, fit that Batman design better than Conroy's voice did. Because one of the issues I had with Asylum and City is, yes, I enjoyed Asylum. I did not like City, but I one of the things that we got everyone got excited about, especially with Asylum, which is you've got it was Paul Dini, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's writing the story, and it's Rocksteady, and it's a Batman game, and they're bringing in Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, and it's all the voices from the animated series, and it was like all the voice work in that game was fan service, pure and simple, which was an excellent way to get as many people interested in the game as they could possibly do. That's fine, but the one thing that I always felt didn't work with Asylum and City was Conroy's voice for that Batman. I don't feel like Conroy's voice works with an armored Batman. Does that make any sense? Whereas Hamill's Joker clearly has the range to play the gritty, psychotic Joker. Like, you've got your animated cartoon one, and then you've got your psychotic one that's represented in the Arkham games. He has the range to play that. I don't feel like Conroy, like, I love Conroy as Batman. Don't get me wrong, Conroy is my Batman. I just don't feel like he was this Batman. And I feel like the guy that they got for Origins, well, yes, there are certain things, like, there are certain times when he is talking. When he's a little slower and he's doing the detective thing, I can see how maybe it it can be conceived as a parody, that it's like he's trying to imitate Conroy, but it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, if you've got any guy, any manly man, I guess, doing like a softer tone, just kind of like thinking, you can kind of make they kind of all sound the same to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But I feel like I just feel like the guy that they got to be to do the voice as the younger Batman, like I feel like that voice actually finally fit that Batman design. But one of the other interesting things is how the costume has worked, like how the costume has evolved over the three games.
It almost looks more advanced in this past iteration than it does in the other two.
Well, because what's really... Well, I can see how...
It's more body armor.
Well, okay, because Origins is a prequel to all of them. But if it goes Origins and then Asylum and then City, like, I don't understand how you go from one... You go from Origins to the Asylum suit, because the Asylum suit is very, like, comic booky. You've got the really tall ears... And
aesthetically I hate Arkham Asylum,
the suit,
and I hate the inability to actually hang on to things and not actually like glide off of them without kind of like the stuff that they introduced in City, and then not having some of the gear from City. I don't like playing Asylum only for those reasons. I like the game, but a lot of that stuff just it tears me away from playing it.
Well, they're two different things. I think a lot of the gadgets that like,
but you like, look at this game and you have every gadget that he has throughout the two games, and then into Asylum and he's like left without a lot of it.
But okay, but Asylum is such a different beast altogether. Like it's not like the other two. And the way they set it up, where he doesn't have all his toys to begin with, like he's caught off guard from the get go about having to go into Asylum, like that works. And a lot of the gadgets that they and stuff that they introduce in City and that carries over into Origins is a direct result of them having an open world game. Like they have to give you a way to move around the place a lot faster, whereas Asylum, you're essentially in a building most of the time. Like you don't have a world that takes you, you know what I'm saying? Like the traversal between the two styles of games is completely different. So you don't have to have the, you don't need the zip gun, or you don't need the ability to glide, because there's nowhere to glide to in Asylum. I've said this before, I always liked the suit in Asylum that you can only get in the combat, like the combat trainer, which is the armor.
Oh,
one.
Yeah. Like, I love that suit.
Why can't, that's like, that was kind of where the suit came from for City. Because it's getting definitely all like armored, and it's like, why can't I use that one in Asylum? But that's a completely other story. So,
His name, by the way, is Roger Craig Smith.
Well, there you go. He's got three first names. No, whatever. Okay, so you've gradually...
I want to touch on the... just lightly on the other voice actors. For the Riddler, who's Enigma in this game, it's the same voice actor throughout the three games. The Penguin is the same. Mad Hatter is the same. Oracle or Barbara Gordon is the same.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
Dr. Harlene Quinzel is Tara Strong, who replaced Arlene Sorkin from the Asylum. She did Harley in the Arkham City. And then Quincy Sharp is, you know, the same. The changes, obviously, are the Batman and the Joker. Something I found quite interesting is They had Harvey Bullock in this game. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
Yes, I believe. Yeah,
and it's the Batman the Animated Series voice.
Oh, cool.
Because I heard it the first time he started talking, because I heard that Danny DeVito-ish type talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait a second. They got an original voice actor back, and he played Bullock in the animated series, the Superman, the New Adventures, and, you know, the Mask of the Phantasm, all the DCAU. I thought it was kind of cool that they brought him back for Origins. Even though he's not in the other two. Which,
oh, great. Now I have another cat.
Nice. But no, I mean, and the rest of the voice cast was cool as well, but I that was one nice nod that I saw in there when I was playing it, even though most people probably didn't pay attention to it.
So, jeez, oh, Pete's. I was trying to mute myself, but so originally you had a tough transition going from City to going into Origins, but you've, like, for me, I didn't have that issue because I played through Origins, or I played through City, disliked it, and never played it again. But you've played it the last 2 years, on and off.
Yeah. Well, like, Arkham Asylum, I played it on the PC before I ever got an Xbox 360. I beat it on the PC. I would never play a game like that on the PC ever again.
I couldn't imagine playing that on the PC.
I mean, I know you can change the buttons, but the way I had to set it up, like I said before, because I had Windows 98 in the keyboard, I would either hit the Alt key or the Windows key, and it would throw the entire game for a loop. So I had to stretch my hand across the keyboard, which was quite painful to actually play, and use the mouse and all the other controls. So thus playing it on an Xbox 360, it's a lot easier. But when I rebought the game for the 360, after having played Arkham City for quite some time, it was so bad trying to go back and play it. I had a hard time. But Arkham City, I played it from the moment I bought my Xbox 360 on Black Friday of 2011, because I got it for $30, and then I got system for $199. But I played it from that point on until when I got Origins for this Black Friday.
And you had a difficult time adjusting.
And I had a slightly difficult time adjusting, more so because while I was... I'm pretty hard to get hit by any bullets or get touched in Arkham City. I found that the AI in Origins is a hell of a lot better than either of the other games. I could pretty much in Arkham Asylum walk up behind or next to somebody and they'd not notice, and same thing with City. I could walk up next to a sniper and I could silently take down a guy that's standing almost kind of diagonal from the other guy, and he wouldn't see me take down his buddy next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could walk over and silently take him down too. It was that stupid. Whereas this game, I tried to take a sniper down on a roof, and because you're normally so close in Arkham City, they can't shoot you. This game, they have no bones about shooting you, even if you're at point-blank range.
Right.
They will shoot you, and then they will call for help, and they will come out of nowhere and attack your ass.
And everybody wants to beat you up. Like, no matter what level of thug it is, they all want to beat you up.
Well, all the thugs, and all the gangs, and all the cops.
Yep.
The other nice thing I like about Origins is when you jump off a building, whether it be ice down below or a side street, you can disappear from view. You can just jump right off the building and just land somewhere. which I quite like. I also like the fast travel with the Batwing.
That's where I notice a lot of audio lag.
That's real bad with lag. I almost think that, like, I mean, I know it's a service thing, and I'm fine with that, but I almost wish that they'd kind of just cut that and just had like a loading screen and just you went to that location.
Right.
But I do like that feature, and I do like that how you, if you unlock it, you can fast travel, not have to worry about, you can go at any time and traverse to those areas, not have to do the Arkham City route of circling around in a giant horseshoe to get where you needed to go.
I guess I don't remember City that well.
Well, Arkham City, they would give you a mission on one side of the map, and then you'd have to go around this giant U, because the center of the map was the towers, and you had the giant wall.
Oh yeah.
So you had to go all the way around to do something, and then you had to go all the way back around to do something else, and then you had to sidestep all the guys with guns. Whereas this one, it's a lot harder to navigate around guys with guns.
You know what I just realized? Have you tried going to where Crime Alley is?
In this game?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've actually gotten there or not.
Well, you can go there right off the bat, I think. Like, cause
I think so, but I can't remember if I've been there.
I'm wondering if anything happens when you do go there, because it's like, you can... That's one of the things I do enjoy about Origins, is that all the places, most of the places in City are all still there, and you can see them. They're just not as run down as they were in City.
Yeah, I've actually come across a lot of those areas on the map already, and you can definitely tell where certain areas were fenced off in City.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it's not run down and everything, and I can tell where some buildings have been either knocked down or used to be higher or have a different setup on the very top of the buildings.
Right.
In this game compared to City, which that tends to be confusing because when I'm in the areas where you have the city, Arkham City layout, I'm expecting to see the rest of the buildings, like, at least somewhat comparable to Arkham City, and they're not.
Right.
But you do still see the landmarks of, you know, like the Ace Chemical and Wonder Tower.
Yep.
The court and stuff like that. So nice nods in there. I mean, obviously they fence off part of Arkham or part of Gotham City for Arkham City. So it makes sense.
Right. All right. Well, you have anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, we can probably do an update again later when we get further along. Like I stated before, I don't know if I said it on the record or before the record, but, I did, all the way up to, I'm getting ready to fight Firefly. I'm, defusing bombs at the moment. I have fought Bane once, which that was a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it was.
I hear the next one is worse.
Oh, great.
Because he starts off in a somewhat Venom mode, and then you kind of fight him, and then he throws you through a wall, and you end up...
Don't spoil it. Come on.
Well, I know that eventually you have to... You hide around in some kind of a like sewer thing, and they turn on the disruptor, so you can't use detective mode.
Oh, wonderful!
Or at least when he gets towards the end of his life. Like I said, I've watched the video, so I know what's going to happen. But it's still, I mostly watched it because I want to know what I got to do for Bane, because I don't want to have to figure it out while I'm getting pummeled.
Right.
That's the other thing. The death screen. I really like how they automatically start reloading.
Yep.
You don't have to say continue.
Yeah. I pulled the trigger just as an update, because this will be out before we do our next giant size episode of Off the Cuff, which is 39 and 40. I pulled the trigger on some capture hardware for video games.
Nice.
So now I, as of it should arrive tomorrow. I purchased the Elgato Game Capture HD. So I am now able to stream all of my video games online.
Oh, nice.
So I think tomorrow, because I'm not able to get Joe from Off the Cuff to play GTA online with me, I think I'm going to attempt to finish Arkham Origins tomorrow, and I'll probably just, I'm going to live stream my entire play session tomorrow. So if anyone is listening to this and would like to see that, you can follow, you can head over to Twitch. I think it's like, it's twitch.com/boothninja81 is my tag, but there'll be links and stuff on Twitter to go and watch it if anyone is interested in seeing that stuff. And I'm starting to do that stuff more because the PlayStation 4 has that stuff built into it, and it's a lot of fun. So,
well, maybe eventually I'll be able to catch one. So just kind of lightly, what do you think they're going to do for the next Arkham game? I know it's kind of premature, being that they just came out with this, and they've already got, you know, some expansions in the works for this, like the play as Bruce Wayne initiation type thing, and the various skins and all that,
I think,
which I plan to get.
I know the rumblings is that Rocksteady's working on another Arkham game. I don't know that they're working on an Arkham game. I think they're working on a Justice League game. Like, that, I heard that rumor before I heard that they were working on another Arkham game. And that's why, Ubisoft, or not Ubisoft, Warner Brothers Montreal got the Origins job. Man. You know what's funny is they may have found, excuse me, and this is really bad. This could get really bad really fast. But they may have found a way to annualize the Arkham games.
I hope they don't annualize them. I like them coming out every other year. Because you had Asylum in 09, in 11 you had City, and in 13 you have Origins. I think if they're going to do the Justice League one, it would actually work out perfectly with the 2015 release of the Batman vs. Superman movie.
I don't think they want to do that. I think we'll get an announcement E3, if not before.
And you're thinking a 2014 release?
I think what's going to happen is they're either going to annualize the Arkham franchise, or Rocksteady is going to have some DC game in 2014, and then Warner Brothers Montreal is going to have another Arkham game in 2015.
I know that the Montreal being, and I was reading rumblings of this somewhere, I don't have the exact source on me right now, but if I find it, I'll be sure to bring that back up. I was reading that there's going to be another game by they've basically given Montreal the rights to play around with the timeline before Asylum.
Right.
So they can make more games as long as they fit in that, you know, span of years between Origins and Asylum. And then I think that Rocksteady is getting everything City and beyond.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that we'll get, I think when I say annualize, I think in 2014 we're going to get I say DC. I'm thinking it's going to be like a Justice League thing, or it's going to be an Arkham game with the Justice League characters. I think you're gonna get. I think we're going to get a rock steady. Oh, screw it. Let's just make it really simple for people to understand what I'm saying. I think we're gonna get a rock steady Arkham game this year, or in 2014, and then I think you're gonna get an Arkham game by Warner Brothers Montreal in 2015. That way, each studio has 2 years to work on a game, but there's still a game every year. It's the same thing that Activision has done with
Call of Duty.
With Call of Duty between Treyarch and Infinity Ward, and it's also what Ubisoft has done with the Assassin's Creed franchise. I don't think Warner Brothers as a studio has the... I don't know that the Arkham franchise has the clout that Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed does. But those two models prove that it can be done, and at least with Assassin's Creed, you can still have it does show that you can still have quality games with an annual release. The question is, will people pay $60 for a new story every year? I probably will. But I do think that that's the direction that they're heading, especially if what you said is in that article is true, where they've given Ubisoft or Warner Brothers Montreal carte blanche to play around before Arkham Asylum. Like, I think you'll get like an I think you'll get Arkham Origins 2 in 2015, and you'll get Arkham what is essentially what would be Arkham Asylum 3 in 2014. So I'm ready for that, especially since whatever the next one's going to be, it's going to be on the next gen systems, and it's going to look so pretty. So pretty.
That's what's going to make me sad about it, is I'm still on a 360. I can't afford a new system at this point. Probably until it hits the 199 range again. So that means unless they magically decide that they're still going to support 360 through the end of 14.
Oh yeah, no, the 360 and PS3, they won't lose support. Like, a game like that, you'll still see. I would actually be surprised if multi-platform games aren't available on the 360 and the PS3 up through 2015. That install base is so large that, and I say the multi-platform stuff, like, you're not going to see exclusive games will not be on the for example, Uncharted 4, this is an example, will not be on the PS3. That will be a PlayStation 4 only game. That will be like one of those games that's a reason to buy a PlayStation 4. They'll use that as a system seller. But for like third party companies like Warner Brothers Games and Ubisoft and stuff like that, they want that install base to maximize their profits. And I think you'll still see Assassin's Creed games and Arkham games and stuff like that, and even Call of Duty. I think you'll see those up until at least 2015, if not longer than that, because, you know, the prices, there's a section of the people that the prices need to come down on the new hardware in order to get it. And some people can't even see the benefit of, you know, of buying the new hardware. Unless Microsoft or Sony is going to step up and, you know, pay Warner Brothers, Ubisoft, or other studios to neglect that install base, that's always a possibility. But it's the same reason that the next Arkham game that comes out next year will be on the 360 is the same reason that Grand Theft Auto 5 was not released on the PS4 and the Xbox One. It's because the PS3 and the 360 just have a ginormous install base. I think it's like 100 million units between the two of them.
Wow.
if not more. And I think there's only 4 million PS4s and Xbox Ones in a month out there. So yeah, they're selling like crazy. The consoles clearly aren't dead, as everyone wanted you to believe with the Wii U, but the install base for the next gen hardware is just not there for multi-platforms to ignore the PS3 and the 360 yet. They'd be shooting themselves in the foot unless they got a nice big fat truck of money to ignore them. So I think you're safe.
Well, that makes me happy. I really hope so, and I don't doubt that. I'm pretty sure that you're right on the money there. So any kind of questions we want to ask the listeners?
Shoot, I don't know. Do you have one?
Well, I guess I can round off a couple. Has anybody actually played Arkham Origins and or any of the other Arkham games? And what are your thoughts about it, if you have played them? And the other thing is, what is a non-superhero topic that you'd like to hear us talk about in the future? Since lately we've been heavily on that because of either A, video games, comics, TV, or film news.
I've got another one that's not even re I've got another question that might help them that might help us get off of this stuff. I kind of thought about it right as I handed it off to you. What jobs have you had in the past that you've hated? Like, what are some of your like the worst jobs that you've had? That maybe you're still in the worst job that you've ever had. I don't know. Like maybe like odd job or like and like how long did you stay there? Like how did you like leave in some fantastic way or like just like I don't know anything like that. Crazy work experiences or just like the most awful work experience you've ever had. I think that'd be kind of fun to talk about because I've had tons of different jobs and different stories and stuff like that. And so I don't know.
So have I.
It'd be fun to see what other people have to say because I know sometimes on Off the Cuff, Danner talks about his experience at working at GameStop and stuff like that. No, it'd be interesting to see what people have to say about their jobs and jobs that they've had in the past. It's like, when they're growing up and stuff like that, and the different types of jobs that people have had. If you guys want to share that, we can talk about that kind of stuff on a future episode. I mean, it's not super geeky, but it's something that everyone has in common and everyone has an opinion on it. So maybe we can give that a shot in an upcoming episode.
Sounds good.
So, and if they want to get in touch with us and let us know all their opinions and their stories and stuff like that, Steve, how do they do that?
Well, they can call the voicemail line 502-526-5821. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can visit the website episode post at geekcastradio.com. You can visit the Facebook fan page by searching Geekcast Radio Network. You can get a hold of us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio, hashtag Altered Geek. My Twitter handle is at SCP21, and yours is?
At Booth Ninja 81.
So I think that about rounds it out this episode. So as always, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks. See you next time.
Bye.